Hi, this is Fred Tatasciore, and you're listening to the Fandom Podcast. Hulk smash! You have to listen now! Listen now!
Welcome to the Fandom Podcast. This is the show that brings together geeks and nerds from across the fandomverse to analyze the news and discuss your favorite TV, movies, comics, and books. This week, we're covering Comic Collecting 101, or in other words, why your comics aren't worth anything. But first, joining me is a guy with a few comics, Nick English.
Yeah, I've collected a few in my day. I also have the potential of having a few more later on in life.
And most of his collection is digital and worthless, is Jeff Dumas.
I thought it was a good investment, but then, no one told me. No one told me I can't just sell my iPad.
Not the new Bitcoin? Come on!
Well, apparently you didn't talk to this guy because he actually owns a comic book store. It's Charles Prowse.
Yeah, talk to me. Also buy your comics for me because then they might be worth something. Don't buy for that reason.
All right, breaking the fourth wall, I am Brand Anuccio. Okay, so this week we are talking about comic collecting, and we are talking about it with Charles Prowse, who is the co-owner of the Nerd Store and also co-founder of Wasatch Comic Con, which is a con for creators. Did I get that the whole tagline thing right?
Yeah, I believe so. That sounds right.
Okay. All right. Good.
Close
good.
Who cares?
Okay, so a couple weeks ago we had Roger Prowse on.
No relation.
I think there's a pretty solid relationship there.
They're friends.
Oh. They're like, we have the same last name. We should be friends.
Exactly.
Is that how that works?
That was how that worked.
Okay, yeah. So we talked with Roger about Wasatch Con a couple weeks ago, and don't worry, we're going to be talking about that a little bit more, but we also wanted to, since we had Charles here, we wanted to talk a little bit about comic books and grading and all of that fun stuff. So, my very first question here is, I found in like my dad's attic this Action Comics number one. Is that worth anything?
Garbage. Straight garbage? Up garbage. No, yeah, that would be a big book if that were in any way remotely true.
Yeah, I wish it were. Yeah, I wish it were true too.
There's no way that's how you would break it to us. There would be texts. There would be Facebook posts. There would be guys. I just bought an island.
It would be like, you remember the Bitcoin that I screwed up on? Yeah, I didn't screw up on this one.
Okay, all right. You had to bring that up, didn't you?
I did. Yes, I did. Yep. You're gonna regret that for the rest of your life.
I am.
Back up, people. Back up.
So I can't remember if I shared the story on the podcast. If I haven't, if I have, bear with me.
I believe you did, but go ahead.
All right. So about 6-7 years ago, back when Bitcoin was just like a bunch of nerds playing in their dorm rooms, I was like, hey, this Bitcoin thing, a bunch of nerds are doing it. I should do it. And so I set up my computer to mine Bitcoin, and I started mining Bitcoin, and it mined 50 Bitcoin. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I put it on my hard drive that I promptly did not back up. And then when it started having troubles and died, I only grabbed the stuff off of it that I thought was important. And that Bitcoin, 50 Bitcoin, couldn't even really buy me a pizza back then. And so I was like, I don't really care about this Bitcoin. It's too much work to get it out. It's not going to be worth anything. Flash forward to about a month ago. It was maybe 2 months ago. It was worth about $20,000 Bitcoin. And I could have been a millionaire. But, yeah. So, you never know when something that you have might actually be worth money, unless it's a comic. Is that the moral of the story?
Yes, that's no. Protect your stuff, I think, is the moral of the story.
Oh, okay.
Back up your computer.
Yeah, I could have been a millionaire.
Yeah, but then you probably wouldn't be doing this podcast, and where would everyone be?
Oh, I think you'd probably be doing more podcasts because then you could afford to just do it.
I'd be doing nothing but podcasts. So
he'd be all
turn
rich
into the new
and
Kevin Smith. He'd be like, all right, I'm just going to do 1,000 podcasts every day.
And one of them's going to stick.
Yeah.
But
but only in the podcast world. He wouldn't be Kevin Smith in any other area.
On that episode of Flash I talked about last episode, Jay and Silent Bob were on it. Just going to throw that out there.
Hmm.
Okay. All right, Charles, I got to ask you a question.
Okay.
So, we've talked about this before. You are not your stereotypical comic book store starter / comic book collector. How did you get your start in this thing?
In comics or in the business?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Start with comics and then continue.
Little column A, little column
B. Okay. I jumped into comics when I was 20 with The Walking Dead. It was actually my first comic book I ever read.
Good choice.
When I was 20. Yeah. It's a phenomenal book. It's still one that I actually stay caught up on, which is rare for me nowadays. But from there, I jumped over to I went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2011. I was lucky enough to get tickets. And I went and I met Kirkman, who at the time it was right before, it was like a month before Walking Dead came out on TV. So no one.
So tell us who Kirkman is for the people who don't know who that is.
Robert Kirkman is the creator of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Ah.
He's the writer. He's the guy that created the whole thing. And so I met him about a month before the TV show went live, back when no one knew who he was at all, and he had no line. And I walked up to him and told him it was the only book – his was the only book I had read, and asked him for recommendations. And he told me to go find Preacher by Garth Ennis. And so I went wandering around Con, and I found Preacher by Garth Ennis, and I read that. And then that led me to Crossed, which I don't recommend any of your listeners follow my path here. Cross is the single worst book you can possibly read,
but not in quality, but no. Maybe in in content, right?
If you are offendable in any way at all, do not read Crossed.
It's all right. Good recommendation.
Yeah, if you are not offendable, if you are like me and like horror stuff and don't get offended, then Crossed is phenomenal and everyone should read it. But if you are in any way offendable, it is not a book for you.
Okay. So what took you from being the comic book reader who only read Crossed and The Walking Dead and Preacher to being a peddler of tights and capes?
I was in vet school, and the whole time I was supposed to be studying and doing homework and stuff, I was reading comic books and playing Magic, and I wasn't actually doing any of the stuff I was supposed to be doing. And so
that's something that probably every one of our listeners can relate to.
Right. And instead of just trying to make it through and sticking on that path, speaking of Kevin Smith, actually, my brother Roger had a conversation with me and used.
Whoa, 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 wait. He's your brother?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Surprise! I was a little confused. Continue.
We were on the phone one night having a conversation, and I was mentioning that one day I'd earn enough money to retire from being a vet and I could open a comic book store. And he was like, that's a really roundabout way of doing that. But I was a broke college student who had no money, and so I didn't think I could open a comic book store right then. And he used Kevin Smith as inspiration and used the fact that Kevin Smith sold his comics and put all of Clerks on his credit card in order to make Clerks. He maxed out all of his credit cards and he went all in, and that's what got him where he wanted to be. And so I said, okay, well, let's do it. And that was in May of 2013, and by October of 2013 we were open.
Wow. So Roger, in his interview, he said that you guys are not the kind just to be like, to put things off. You guys just go out and do things. That sounds pretty accurate. Do you argue with that at all?
Nope, that's pretty much us.
So I asked him this question, and he wasn't able really to give me an answer. Why do you think that you guys both just go out and do things? Was there something in your makeup that is like, hey, this is what we do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to blame my parentage. My parents, they were both people who were constantly working when I was young, to the point where they're both salesmen in different industries. But every single time I was in a car with them, they were on the phone working. If we went out to lunch, they had to take a phone call for work. And they were constantly just doing stuff. And so that's just kind of how I was raised. And outside of that, it's a matter of, I think for both of us,
why talk about it? I mean, if there's any possibility of doing it, why not just get up and figure out how to do it and just get it done? And yeah.
So how did your parents take it then? There's these salespeople. There are these people who are always working hard. How did they take it when you said, "Hey, you know that job of being a vet where I could put doctor in front of my name? Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna open up a comic book store."
They weren't very happy when they found out I was going to be a college dropout. They at that point told me, because at the time they were helping me through college by, I didn't have to pay for my phone bill and my dad paid for my car insurance. You know, smaller bills, but still bills that definitely helped take things off my plate. And as soon as I told them that, they said, "Okay, well, that's going away. You have to pay for your own stuff now." And I said, "Okay." Outside of that, I mean, they did try initially to talk me out of it, and they tried to convince me that I should get a degree, and then after I get my degree, I can go and try this comic book thing and see how it worked. And if it didn't work out, I could always fall back on my degree. And I was just someone who I've never really had a backup plan. I've never really cared to have backup plans.
You got to make this one work, because there is no backup, right?
Right. A backup plan to me is just planning to fail.
Would you say that that's the reason why you have been successful, or can you contribute that to something else?
I'd say,
like, why do you think that the nerd store has been successful?
A lot of it is because I didn't have a backup plan. A lot of it is because I just said, "Okay, this is happening." And there was no even idea of what if it doesn't happen, what am I going to do, or anything like that. I just said, "Okay, this is happening," and I figured out a way to make it happen. I mean, when we first opened, I didn't take a paycheck for 6 months. I lived off of one cup noodle a day. That's
not a diet that I would recommend it for anyone.
It's great if you want to lose weight. The starvation diet, I lost about 40 pounds in that amount of time.
Oh, geez.
You were also very young at the time, so your body might have been able to handle it a little bit better.
Also true. I was
just throwing that out there.
I was 23 when that happened. But I lost 40 pounds in that first, after just getting open. And that was rough. But yeah, I wasn't going to let anything stop me. I wasn't going to let the fact that I didn't have money stop me from doing it.
That's really cool. So I just did some mental math there. You said you were 23 when you opened the store. You said you were 20 when you first started reading comics. So you went from reading your first comic to opening up a comic book store in 3 years.
Yep.
So it sounds to me like you've got a little bit of a personality trait there, where when you go into something, you go all into it. Because I'm going to say that you're one of the biggest experts that I know now on comics and how to buy comics and how to save your comics and how to protect your comics and how to grade your comics and all those fun things. Do you have anything else in your life that you is this a pattern where you are like, "Okay, I'm jumping into this, so I'm going to do it. I'm doing it full hog," or is this comic book specific?
It was, I mean, kind of a pattern for me. I'd always, when I jumped into something, I did jump in, but it was usually short lived. Which was actually one of the reasons my parents were trying to convince me to stay in school, because I had a tendency to get all into something and then get like, "Okay, now I'm bored with that," and move on to the next thing.
So you have an extensive collection of Pogs is what you're saying. You probably don't even know what that is.
I mean,
wow, I'm old. Sorry.
I have a ton of Pogs. We sold Pogs when I first opened.
That's awesome.
I found Pogs to sell Pogs, and I actually just pulled them out the other day. Yes, I actually do have quite a few Pogs. But
that's awesome.
So what are one of those things that your parents were like, "See, you did this and you gave up on it really quick"?
I mean, nothing's like really quick, but like, I used to be, you know, when I first started working in retail, my first job was actually working for Roger at his pet store out in Tooele. And I got really into reptiles and stuff through there, and really into spiders, and started doing animal shows and stuff. And then that was what led me down the path to vet. And that was actually one of my longer ones. But before that was stuff like paintball. I got way into paintball. And then when all my friends fell out, so did I. It's kind of how that worked. And then I can't think of anything specifically.
Did you ever have laser tag in the blood? Because I knew a lot of people like that. I worked at Laser Quest forever.
I played a lot of Laser Quest when I was a kid.
I bet that I saw you.
And then I found paintball. And then I started paintballing
a lot. It's like laser tag, but it hurts.
Yeah, but better.
So what I'm hearing is in an alternate universe where your friends never gave up on paintball, we'd be talking to Charles Prowse, owner of a paintball arena.
That was actually kind of my goal in high school. I joined DECA, and I was in a bunch of different entrepreneur and business classes in high school, and making business plans for a paintball arena.
There you go. Cool.
So, all right. So let's talk about comics here for a minute.
So no. Okay. I'm not going past this. Whoa. So when is there going to be a paintball arena connected to the nerd store?
That is a good question, considering I haven't played. I played like 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was the last time I played.
All right.
So it's been a while.
You know,
do you still have your equipment?
Yeah, I still have all of it.
Or did you sell it out? Oh, okay.
No, cool. I still have all
of
it.
You know his store is connected to the mall, right?
Well, there is a giant parking lot that they always put like big like carnivals in, like right behind his store. I'm just thinking circus tent, hay bales. Just throwing it out there.
I'll see if maybe I can work that into Wasatch next year.
There you go.
Be like the greatest showman.
And then
real estate
is
a terrible investment. I just need a tent.
Yeah, we don't need a building. Spoiler for the greatest showman.
You know what? I have good ideas. I'm just saying.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about paintball. I didn't know that was going to come up at all.
All right, so comic collecting. So let's say somebody theoretically has a comic that they think is worth some money. What would you recommend that they do?
If they have one that they think is worth money?
My parents gave me Death of Superman. What do I do with that? What do I do with this information?
Your best bet is to take the actual book, not the information about the book. Take the actual book down to a retailer, someone like me or any local comic shop that you trust, and ask them information. Ask them for information. Try and if you just want to sell it, try and sell it to them. A lot of times, if you just want appraisal services, different shops may charge for something like that. If it's a single book, they can just let you know pretty quick and easy. And you can usually gauge the reaction of the book and the value of the book based on the reaction of the person you bring it into. Because if you bring in an Action Comics number one, I'm going to freak out a little bit.
So, that to me sounds like you have to find somebody that you trust a little bit. Like if you feel like your book is worth $1 million, don't make that be your, hi, my name is Brandon, and I've got an Action Comics number one. Because, like, a shady business guy is going to be all like, oh, no, that's garbage. I'll throw it out for you. But somebody that you trust, if they, you know, you're first off going to know how to read that reaction.
Right.
And second off, you're going to trust them. You're going to have that pre-existing relationship.
That's one of the things I do recommend comic book collecting in general is finding a shop that you trust and a good local connection to any of that. If you don't have anything like that in your area, make sure you do a lot of research before you actually think you have anything. I can't tell you how many times people have walked in to my shop and just been like, yeah, I have this really rare book. It's worth like $5,000, and they bring it in and it's a reprint of what they think they have. And it's also in really bad condition and therefore not worth like a dollar. One of the most common ones is the first appearance of the Punisher, because when the Punisher movie came out, they did a big reprint of it with that came out as a promotional for the movie. And it says now starring the Punisher in big letters on the bottom. But other than that, it looks just like the regular cover. And so I get a lot of people that walk in and say, oh, I have this really expensive book, and they hand it to me, and it's that one, and it's the reprint, and the reprint's not worth anything.
So and they bought it for like $1,000, thinking that they could sell it for $5.
I've had people pay like $100 for it and get really mad at me that they because they overpaid for the book. And they were legitimately – I have one guy who won't shop with me anymore or come into the store because I told him his book was not worth money.
No, jeez.
So – I've got to tell this story. I was there a few weeks ago when this guy walks in with a backpack and says, hey, do you buy comics? And I just kind of was watching you interact with him, and you're like, oh yeah, what do you have? And he pulls out a single Mylar bag with like five comics jammed into it. And he's like, I've got these original Star Wars comics in mint condition. And like me as the as somebody who doesn't really know that much about it, I'm looking at it, I'm like, I can see the creases in the paper from here. How often does that happen where somebody thinks they have something and they don't really have anything at all?
Pretty much every time someone walks in saying they think they have something.
If you think you have something,
I resemble that remark.
Far more often they think they have something than they actually do. It's just the way it works. Everyone.
So has anybody ever come in with something that was actually like really valuable and they had no idea?
Yeah. One of my first purchases actually was the same guy who was thrilled that I was buying. And he came in one day and he got a comic book collection from his uncle. And he came in and he was riding the bus down from Murray or – no, I think it was Harriman. Anyway, he was riding the bus a ways to get to us. And he came down one day with a box back when I was the only employee. And he comes down and brings it in and is like, hey, do you buy comics? And I start flipping through it. And there's a giant size X-Men number one just chilling there. As well as an X-Men 12 and an X-Men 14 and like a whole bunch of really early X-Men in this box.
Like written by Stan Lee early, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 12 and 14 is written by Stan. A lot of it was a lot of people don't know this, but pre-1970 they actually released new material for X-Men. From 1970 to 1975 they continued the numbering, but they just reprinted old stories. And so this was actually pre the reprint stuff. That goes into X-Men specifics. But this guy had no idea what he had. And then the next day he shows up with a second box and it has a Hulk 181, which is the first appearance of Wolverine.
So not worth a lot.
No. This guy legitimately had books that were nowadays. I mean, at the time they weren't nearly as much because a lot of the market has changed over the last 3 years. But nowadays, those books in good condition are $1,000 each.
It's stories like that that make people think, well, I have old comics.
Right, which is why everyone goes, oh, I must also have something good. But it is rare that somebody actually has something good. There's a reason these books are expensive. It's because not many people have them.
Well, and it also has to not just be the old book, but also in decent condition, right?
Correct.
So like if my little brother went in and colored in all of the word bubbles with a blue crayon, even though it's a giant size X-Men number one, if all the word bubbles are colored in, is that going to be worth anything?
I mean, something of that caliber still would be worth some money. But something like, you know, like a first Morbius, kind of the lower end keys, that would not, that, at that point, something like that would just go and lose almost all value. But it would definitely go down in value for sure.
So can you give us a like quick rundown of like what they look for in like grading, for example? So you say, okay, well, this doesn't have any value. And I know there's a point system. How does that work? What do you look for?
To start with, there is the point system. And one of the things, the beauty about the point system is that the point system doesn't account for age, which is something that I get a lot, which is, oh, this book's really good condition for its age.
Doesn't matter.
Right. The age doesn't actually matter. And the point system ignores age, which is good and bad for people who are collecting. But the way it's on a scale of 10. Tens do exist, but they are incredibly rare, and every book is expensive if it's a 10, no matter what the book is, just because they are incredibly rare. 9.9s are almost as rare as 10s, and a 9.8 is realistically the top end that you're going to get. It is.
So if you got a 9, if you get a 9.8 back, you win.
Yeah.
Don't be mad you didn't get a 10.
Yeah, no. A 9.8 is
you win.
A 9.8 is the standard top end. That's going to be your best stuff. If you just send something away and it comes back a 10, you just won the lottery. Like, it's pretty much that rare.
Quick, go to Vegas right now.
Right. Or don't, because you just spent
unless your name is Brandon Ushio. Don't ever go to Vegas.
Ever.
What's the worst graded you've ever seen? What's the worst grade you've ever physically had in your store or whatever, saying, like, why did we even bother?
The worst I've seen, I have the lowest they grade is a 0.5, and I have seen a 0.5.
Oh, okay.
All right. So is a 0.5 cover ripped off?
Can be.
Or are those completely like gone? Because I know that that happened a lot.
I have I have a 2.0 that has a detached cover.
Interesting. Okay. So here I have a legitimate question about this. And so my dad, he had an extensive comic book collection in his youth. And one that I specifically remember is that he had the Batman Annual number one giant size or whatever. I don't know, whatever it is. It's the one that you like flip through and it has all the Batmobiles, like toys and like what's in his belt and everything. He loved that comic. It was his favorite comic. He carried it around with him all the time. It's not in very good shape, obviously, because it's bent and creased and stuff. He put a sticker on the front and wrote, "This is Chaz's book. Do not touch Mary, his sister." So
that's,
yeah,
go.
I don't just know, based like, on that, that's gonna end be of statement. Like a 2.0 type grade book. A point five is gonna be considered something that is barely there.
Soaked in water. It's the Dead Sea Scrolls of comics. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yeah.
You can barely even tell that it is a comic.
Yeah, yeah. At a certain point, if you take it out, you're a little bit afraid that it's just going to crumple in your hands. That's a 0.5.
So if there is a 0.5 Action Comics number one, which is widely considered the most expensive comic, because it's sold for
it
the
is
most,
the most expensive.
How much would that be worth? Yeah, how much would that be worth? A 0.5 Action Comics number one.
Still worth a substantial amount of money. I don't want to have a...
I guess auction, however much somebody is willing to pay for it.
Realistically, yeah.
Really,
but there have been people who have sold Action Comics number one pages. Just a single page on eBay and stuff. And they get thousands of dollars for them.
Yeah, because they ripped them out.
Just
they're like, I got this book. It will sell for $10,000 by itself. But I've got 10 pages here. I'm going to sell that out a piece at a time.
Right.
There was that contest saying, tear out this page and send it back to us through Action Comics. So
there's been a lot of, there's a lot of different things like Hulk 181 is really common for this, but it had the Marvel value stamp, which you actually had to cut out of the book to collect all the stamps.
Ah, I see.
That just hurts.
Yeah. So that lowers the grade too. But as far as like what we look for is, do you look down the spine and see if there's any damage to the spine, specifically color breaking damage, stuff that if you were to look at it and it actually breaks the color. So if it's like a black book and there's a white line where there's been a fold in the spine, if there's any folds or creases in the actual book, they look at the pages to see if the pages are white or off white because they're all printed on white paper. And as age goes on, they erode, so they go to off-white or cream-colored pages. They check the...
It's the acid, yeah. Yes.
They check the clarity of the color and see if the color on the cover and the color within the book is still there. They see how much ink bleed has happened on that particular book. They take a lot of things into account. There's actually a book produced by the guys that produce the Overstreet people, the people that produce the price guide. They have a book that is a standalone thick book on how to grade comics.
What is that book called? Do you know?
Overstreet Price Guide, How to Grade Comics or Grading Comics.
Okay. And what is Overstreet? What is that? I've never heard of that. Is that just like the company that does it?
Do you remember like Beckett back in the day?
They were the ones who did the baseball cards, right? Who told you how much your X-Men cards were worth and all that
stuff. Right, and so they kind of tracked values of cards, and that was the kind of the golden standard for when you wanted to sell or trade cards. You based it on what Beckett said the value was. And that was
So this is like Kelly Blue Book for comics, or Kelly...
Yes,
okay.
But it is only printed once a year, so it's a little flawed, because it is accurate one time a year. For about a week after it comes out. And sometimes not even then.
There's this invention that I should tell them about called the internet.
Right.
Where you can charge a subscription fee or something and keep it up to date more often.
And
I've seen apps and stuff. Like, I think one that I found was called Kapow or something like that. And they said, and I bet what they do is they take the guide and then they just upload all the information from the guide onto this app, and you can just search comics and say, okay, this is how much it's worth. Do you think that that's what they do?
There's a couple different ones. There's ones that do that. There's ones that track sales on eBay. and see what sales on eBay are and just compile it into information for you to easily check. There's ones that track other website sales and all sorts of stuff. Realistically, though, the sad thing with the comics industry is there's not a standard, like a gold standard for price guide. That's a really up-to-date, accurate one. A lot of the old schooler guys will still use the Overstreet. And I still use Overstreet to an extent to help me know kind of ballparks of some of the books that I don't know necessarily off the top of my head, because there's so many out there that it's hard to know values off the top of your head. So I'll still use it for that purposes, but realistically, there's just no price guide that is effective in accurately getting what the modern mark, what the current market value for a book is, with the exception of just looking at eBay sold listings.
Okay. So have you ever watched the show Pawn Stars?
Yes. Once or twice.
Is that kind of what it's like when somebody comes in and says, "Hey, I've got a Amazing Spider-Man 129 in perfect condition," and you look at it and say, "Oh, that's going to go for about $1,500. I'll give you $500 for it." Is that kind of how this goes? Like, if somebody says my comic is worth this, and they come in to sell it to you, how does that process work?
So, if someone wants to come and sell me a book, I don't give pricing sight unseen. There's just too many variables. Too often are they reprints or the wrong. Sometimes it is not a reprint. It is legitimately a Spider-Man number one, but it's a Spider-Man number one from 1994 and not the right Spider-Man number one that they think they have.
Yeah, that was my next one. I've got this X-Men. It's drawn. X-Men number one, drawn right by Jim Lee. How much is that worth?
And the problem is they don't know that. They just say, "Oh, I have an X-Men number one." And most of the time it's that type of scenario. So I don't actually do pricing sight unseen. I have to take a look at the book to figure out if it is a legit book and what it is. And then after I've taken a look at the book, I look up what the current value of the book is, and do my best research to kind of figure out, you know, realistically, it's what am I going to sell the book for? Like, when I turn around and buy this book, what am I going to turn around and sell it for? And then I make an offer based on that. And sometimes it is 50%. Sometimes it's a little less. Sometimes it's more. Kind of depends on the book and what my actual sellability of the book is. If I know I've got somebody, if like somebody brings in a Spider-Man 300, for instance, the first appearance of Venom, I know I can turn around tomorrow and sell that at full value. And so I will offer more for that book because I know that I don't have to sit on it for very long. But if they bring in an old Tales from the Crypt book that happens to be worth money, that's a little more of a niche market, and it's going to take me a lot longer to find someone to purchase it. It might be a valuable book, but I can't offer as much for it because I don't necessarily have somebody or the ability to sell it right away, and I have to take into account overheads and things.
Well, I'm pretty sure that you have an employee that would buy that pretty quickly. But
yeah, that one maybe not, but
that one example.
Yeah, no, but yes. Yeah, that makes makes sense. And that's just good business on your part. And so anyone that thinks they're going to walk into a comic book store and get full value for something,
you're not.
That you're never going to get that. So just know that right off the bat. Like, I mean, just be smart
about it.
You
will always get more selling it by yourself on eBay than a comic store will offer you. Always. The difference is have to go through.
Yeah, but it's so much work.
No, that's it. That's exactly it. You have to go through all the work of selling it on eBay. And if you happen to not know grading and you put in that it's a near mint copy and it lands to somebody and they buy it and they do know grading and it's not a near mint copy, they're not going to be happy. And then you have to deal with
you're going to have problems.
They're going to get their money back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always safer to go through a comic store.
Easier.
So what you're saying is that anytime you want to sell something on eBay, you should probably have it graded first. So tell me about that.
So grading process. That is, there's a couple companies, two that are reputable, one just don't use. So CGC and CBCS are both comic book grading companies. CGC was the first. CBCS is started by one of the original founders of CGC.
I don't want to have. Yeah, we all know the tale.
But those two companies are both reputable, and you can send in. And what they do is it's a third party grading, so you can contact guys like your local comic shop guys like me. We can facilitate for you. We'll take your book, send it to CGC, and they'll send us back a copy that we call slabbed, or it's vacuum sealed in a Mylar bag and then encased in a plastic slab that gives you the pertinent information about the book, you know, who the author, who's the writer, who's the artist, what's the publisher, what issue number, what is special about this book, why is this a book one that's worth grading, you know, and then the grade of the book and out of 10 on that out of 10 scale. And then the one that you just don't want to use is PGX. Just don't use PGX. They're terrible.
Okay.
That's all you need to know about them.
Now, why? Okay. No, I'm legitimately curious. Like, why would you say PGX is terrible? Do they typically downgrade them worse? Do they not have as high quality of a product? Like, it's not as sealed correctly. They don't use acid-free stuff, so it's going to deteriorate in any way.
They use the same...
These are all questions
quality
I have.
Product as like CBCS or CGC, but their grading service is not the same quality. The actual physical people there doing the grading. I had a buddy of mine that didn't have an eBay account when we first opened and asked me to order him in a 9.8 book off of eBay. And he paid us for it and we did it for him. And it came in and it was a 9.8 PGX copy of this book. And again, 9.8 is basically 10. It's a near mint copy. That's what it's supposed to be. It came in and it had what we call a subscription fold, which is what they used to do when they had mail order subscriptions is they'd literally fold the book in half and slide it in the mailbox. And so you had a visible fold going all the way down the front cover that you could see was color breaking and was actually distracting from the book. And it was still graded as a 9.8 by PGX. The value wise, people look at a PGX book and value it the same as they would a ungraded or a raw book. When you're trying to sell it or buy one, you're buying it for the same price you would a raw book or you're selling it for that same price. And PGX has been known to take bribes to increase the grade.
So here is my question. So let's say I am not the type of person that happened to have, you know, a uncle that brought, and I had a backpack, right? And I wanted to start collecting comic books for the purpose of trying to make either good investments or just, you know, whatever. Like, is that a possibility still, or is the market been so flooded that, you know, I mean, the example that I could give is, how am I supposed to know that the you know, Walking Dead number one is going to be worth something, you know, in 10 years? Yeah. And is there any way that I can just try to do that? Do I just pick up number ones whenever they come out, or like, what would you recommend?
So there is, it's speculation, comic book speculation is what we call it. And it's a pretty common act, and it does take it's an art form. The truth is if a comic book store knew that the next Walking Dead number one came out, and I know that in 3 years I can sell that book. Well, Walking Dead is a little longer than that. But if I know I can take this book and in 3 years sell it for a couple $100, I'm just not going to sell it to you for $4 now. I'm just going to throw it in my back room and hold on to it. But the truth is that we don't know, and no one really knows. If you're wanting to speculate, the best thing I can recommend is to speculate on older books, and you're going to need to drop a little bit of money to begin with. But start buying up some of the older stuff. You know, like the first appearance of, you know, if a few years ago you picked up the first appearance of Iron Man before they announced the Iron Man movie, that would have been a really good investment at the time. And so now, I mean, you know, look, picking up the first Vision before he came into Avengers would have been really good. Deadpool last year, right now, the first Cable, if you have it, is a really good book to have because he's about to hit the movies.
Well, so are you saying that it's a good book to have or a good book to sell?
Good book to sell right now. Right now, that one's a good book to sell. And so if you're...
It's a good book to have
already purchased, yeah, and be ready to sell here in the next month. These are things that... speculation is it's hard, and there's not really an easy way to do it.
I am still holding on to my Human Fly number one.
Just in case they come out with that awesome Human Fly movie.
They basically wrote on the cover that it is, you know, the most amazing superhero that they've ever had yet. So I am holding out on that one because that's pretty amazing. So now I have a next question. So how do you feel about variant covers and stuff like that? Are those going to be worth anything, or is it just fun to have them? Because that's something that has been kind of going nuts, and, you know, it kind of overwhelms a person that just doesn't know. Like, it kind of seems like to me that the only time that that variant cover would be worth anything is if for some reason it was special in some way, because there's a million variant covers of everything. So why would that one, I mean, is that just speculation again? Or
yeah, variants are weird. It comes down a lot to the artists who actually did the variant. What quality of work was it? Like some of the early Scotty Young stuff that he did, is actually worth some money, like, you know, a couple hundred bucks for his first cover, which is What If Venom Had Controlled Deadpool. So anyway, the Scotty Young is an example. That one's worth a bunch of money now when it wasn't then, but that's because nobody knew who Scotty Young was, and now he's super popular and everyone wants all of his art. So a lot of variant covers comes down to the artist and the actual work done on the cover and how good of a cover it is. Those, again, to know they're going to be worth money, you don't. It's a matter of is this creator going to be somebody who is big now? When you start to get into it and you start to know it a little better and you get into the industry, you can start to see, like, Art Germ, for instance. Art Germ, somebody who right now is huge, and some of his early stuff is worth a lot of money. And if you had gotten in on his early stuff or paid attention as he started to have his rise and knew he was going to be popular, you could have made some money on that early stuff. But it's just a matter of paying attention to the creators on when it comes to variants.
So do you believe that, for example, Art Germ, okay, this guy, that in, you know, 20 years his stuff is going to be worth like the same that like 20 years ago stuff is now? So like maybe the Venom 300, which, you know, probably came out about 20 years ago, I'm assuming. I don't know
about
these
30 years
very
ago
well,
on Spider-Man 300.
Okay, so let's do 30 then. Do you think that this Art Germ stuff potentially could be the same, like in 30 years?
I think it could be worth some money. Art Germ, Adam Hughes, some of those guys can still be worth money. I think their work is quality enough. They will not be quite the same as Spider-Man 300, because that is a first appearance of a major character. I do think stuff I can show you one that came out somewhat recently, which was,
so let's say Spider-Gwen number one. Okay, Spider-Gwen, let's say that, like, Spider-Gwen number one is a character that probably we didn't know was going to be super popular. It probably is just kind of one of those things, like, let's try this out. Do you think that that one will be worth a lot of money later if there was a variant of that? I have no idea.
So, but like, her first appearance, for instance, her Edge of Spider-Verse number one, is actually worth a good amount of money now, the variant. The variant in just the last few years has skyrocketed because of popularity of that character. And yeah, if she gets more popular, and if they do, especially if they do something with her like on the big screen and she becomes a household name, then yeah, I believe that her first appearance is going to be very expensive. A lot of what it comes down to as well is how many of that were produced.
So I've got a copy of it. I've got all the Spider-Verse stuff that I bought from you, including the Edge of Spider-Verse. Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen was in number two. And I remember, talking about speculators, this was a big deal. I bought that, and then they announced the Spider-Gwen book. And when they announced Spider-Gwen, Edge of Spider-Verse, all of a sudden, Edge of Spider-Verse number two was worth like $300.
Yep.
I'm looking at eBay right now, and there's a 9.8 Edge of Spider-Verse number one that right now is at $69. The buy it nows are at like $120.
Sounds about right.
So, I mean, even in just the few years since it came out, when people thought, oh, she's going to be huge, and she's big. They've given her a lot of story based off of this one little Spider-Verse spinoff. It's all about speculation, and you just never know when you're going to hit the gold mine.
Right, which is why I always say don't collect for that reason. I mean, realistically, your best collection is the one that you enjoy and you read because you like it. If you are going to do that, there are ways to do it, which is, I mean, again, Edge of Spider-Verse is a good example of it. It's still one that's worth money. I mean, it still was worth paying $4 for it when it came out, but the craze of it hit and it's never going to be necessarily as big as it was. Although the variant, which was a 1 in 25, is substantially more than that and if you add a couple hundred dollars. So some of the variants can be worth more money. Speculation, it's a matter of playing the game, knowing when to sell and when to keep. It's a lot like the stock market in that way, right?
What? I was just thinking the same thing. I was just like, the stock market. What's the Dow at today? But we'll see at the cat. We'll say
that's
the
what
cow.
You're playing, though. I mean, realistically, you're basing it on, if you're doing comic book speculation, you're basing it on, okay, when's the next movie coming out and what characters might be in it. You know, we're talking New Mutants, and as soon as New Mutants was announced, people started gathering up, okay, New Mutants number one, the first appearance of the New Mutants, what characters might they use? And then when they announced it was going to be Demon Bear, people started buying the Demon Bear books like crazy. And that started going up and up in value. When they announced the Apocalypse movie, the first appearance of Apocalypse went from the 50-cent bin. We literally picked one up for 50 cents right before they announced it, to being several hundred dollars and then dropping back down once the character wasn't as popular as people were thinking it was going to be.
And the movie wasn't as good as they wanted it to be.
Nothing about that movie went right, I guess.
Hey, you know what? I just watched it on HBO like yesterday, the end of it, and
I enjoy that.
Entertained. So, I mean, wasn't all bad.
Yeah. So, let me ask you about signatures on these CGCs. So, you're having a comic con there at the mall where you're going to have creators where they've got things like you've got Bob McLeod coming speaking of New Mutants and all that. So, if I were to say, "Hey, I've got New Mutants number 1," Bob McLeod, you played a big role in this. Sign this. Is that I've heard that you don't want to have people sign it because it's going to say, oh, that's just a mark on the book now, and they're going to grade that as if it was some toddler who scribbled on it. Is that accurate?
Depends on how you're doing it. So if you want to have him sign it and then get it graded, you have to grab somebody that's a representative of the grading company before you get it signed. So, for instance, with CGC, CGC will be at the con, and we will be running it at the show. And so what you'll want to do is you'll want to come up to the CGC booth and let us know that you're about to go get a Bob McLeod signature. Our witness will walk over with you, witness it being signed, and we'll just hang out with you while you're hanging out and doing whatever you're doing at the McLeod booth. And once you're done, you'll walk back holding the book back to the table with the witness. At that point, we will take it from you and send it off to get graded. And then it will come back and it will be slabbed, and it will be slabbed with what's called a yellow label. And a yellow label is literally that. The label is yellow, but it's the signature series label. And so that is them authenticating and verifying that, yes, this signature is Bob McLeod, and yes, it is real. If you were to walk over and get it signed and then walk over to the booth, the people at the booth, we could send it in still, but it would come back with a green label saying markings, name written on cover in marker, because there is no proof that it was Bob McLeod that did it.
Huh.
So at another convention, I had Stan Lee sign something for me, and at the edge of his booth, there was, I don't know if it was CGC, but there was somebody there saying, "Hey, for $10, you can get this sticker that says this was authentically signed by Stan Lee." Is that worthless? Okay, because I realized now, that it was worthless
the bigger question.
As soon as I walked away.
Did you buy that sticker?
Oh, I bought it. It's stuck right on the Spider-Man mask that he signed. But I realized that it was worthless when they took the sticker and they cut it off the roll and they handed it to me. And I was like, ooh, oh. So I could have taken that and put it on anything. And yeah, I could, like, and I saw them put it on somebody else's Mylar bag. Right. I was like, that's just a Mylar bag.
You can put any comic
inside of there. So don't.
Don't be a sucker for that, COAs, is what you're saying. And like certificate of authenticities are much the same way. They are only as good as the company that it's coming from. So if like a COA, you're buying a COA from a legitimate company, awesome. But literally anyone can make a COA and make a company look good and say, yep, this was signed by this person, and then forge it. There was actually a big scandal recently in the comics industry of a company that was doing that, that was caught authenticating. And this is one of the other reasons you don't want to use PGX, because everything was authenticated through PGX. But they were caught faking autographs and then claiming they were authentic and selling them on eBay. But that happens. And so if for sales purposes, if for your own purposes, you just want to get it signed because you like the creator and you like the book and you just want to meet the creator and have the signature, then by all means, I have a ton of books in my collection that are not graded and don't have a COA or anything, that I just had them signed because I liked it. But
because you know, this is so-and-so's autograph. I don't need to prove it to anybody.
Right. Cause I'm not planning on selling it. It's right. Me. It's for me. I don't really care if anyone else knows or believes me, because it's for me. But if you are doing it for the purpose of wanting to sell, or maybe you want to sell it in the future, or you're not really sure but may as well, then you're going to want to authenticate it, because the truth is, in the modern age, how do we know that anything is signed by the person that they say it's signed by?
So what you're saying is that if I'm telling my wife that this is our children's college fund, get them all signed and slabbed, right?
Yeah, if you're gonna be doing it for investment purposes and you're getting signatures, make sure you have a witness and a representative of that company with you to witness the actual signature happen. If they aren't with you, they won't be able to do anything about it.
Okay. So, all right. So at WasatchCon, I mean, Bob McLeod's a big name. Kevin Eastman's probably a big name to get CGC involved in on a signature, maybe. What are some of the other names that you're thinking that maybe you might want to get CGC involved?
Oh, sorry. Matt Hawkins would be a big one. Matt Hawkins has done a bunch of stuff. And a lot of it comes down to, again, what's your purpose behind getting it signed and slabbed? A lot of something that you can, that we can actually, that they, that CGC can actually do, and you, a lot of people don't know that you can do this at cons, is you can actually commission, like, they make blank sketch covers of comic books, and then you can go to a convention and pay an artist and they will draw on it for you. And then you can then take that and get it, take it over, have CGC come with you to pick it up from the artist, and then you can get that graded as well. And then that will just get sent off and come back as an original art piece that is now your personal art piece that you got done at the convention.
Well, that's cool. That is cool.
So that type of stuff is really cool, and that's actually something that I personally do a ton of.
So I'm gonna bet, though, that this convention, Wasatch Comic Con, is not necessarily about, hey, I'm a speculator, I want to come get things signed. What would you say the heart of this convention is?
The fans, to meet the people they're fans of. I mean, that's, again, like I said at the beginning, it was last episode. But the whole purpose of this convention for us is to make this portion of the industry and the creators behind the things we all love as accessible as possible. That's why it's a free to attend show. That's why we're bringing in as many people as we can. We want to make this as accessible to as many people as we can, because I love comics and I know other people do too. And I would love we just want to do it as a celebration of creativity.
That is awesome. That's kind of what the heart and soul of comics in general is a celebration of that creativity. Anybody who's speculating, either you've got more money than you know what to do with, or fewer brain cells than you need. I mean,
or then, you're doing it correctly and making some money.
Right, that's my opinion. And I'm the guy who, like, we've talked about it on every episode. For the past four episodes, we've talked about, I'm not the guy that you want going with you to Vegas. I don't have that kind of instinct. So to me, a comic book is, the value in the comic book is in the story. Who are some of the other creators that are coming, and why should we, for better terms, care?
Come check out Ryan Katie and Philip Seavey, who both work with Matt Hawkins over at Top Cow. They're both putting out awesome books right now. Doug Wagner, who is doing a bunch of work over at Image Comics, has been in the industry for 20 something years. He's a great guy. So come and check him out. And then we had just, are working on getting, and I think we're probably going to get Bill Mesner. It's looking like that is probably going to end up happening, which is a homeless comic book creator who could use some help. And so come down, pick up some prints and get some stuff signed by him. And I mean, honestly, the reason you should care is just it's free. Come check it out. Come see what they have to offer and come get introduced into some new stories that you didn't necessarily know about before this and learn about some new people and some new creators.
So I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before, but back around just before the podcast started, I decided I was going to start collecting comics again. And it was Free Comic Book Day. And I decided I'm going to hit up every store in the Valley, in the Salt Lake Valley, because Free Comic Book Day is going to be the equivalent of Black Friday for like Walmart. It's going to be the day where it's crazy, where there's lots of stuff going on. I'm going to see what the stores are like. And if the stores can be good and upbeat and happy on Free Comic Book Day, then, and if they can be friendly to their customers on Free Comic Book Day, then they can be friendly at any time of the year. And so I went and I got some terrible reactions. I got people telling me so I went in with The Walking Dead. I wanted to start collecting The Walking Dead. I enjoyed the show and I'd read some of the comics. And I was like, you know what? This is going to be a series I'm going to get. And so I picked up a lot of that. And, you know, so I went, hey, where do you guys have the first compendium for The Walking Dead? And I had people say, well, it's nothing like the book or nothing like the TV show. And if you just like the TV show, then you're not going to like this. And, you know, and I'm like, no, I already know I like it. And I said that this is what I wanted. And, you know, so I, okay, thanks for your help. And I left. I walked into the nerd store there in the Valley Fair Mall. And this shows how big of a nerd I am. I was wearing Google Glass at the time. And yeah, you can laugh at me. That's fine.
oh, you're the one that bought them.
No, actually, I got somebody else to buy it for me. That was the cool thing.
Oh.
no, but so I walked into the nerd store, and I had never met him before in my entire life. But Edgar, I walked in, and Edgar goes, "Hey, how's it going?" And like, I literally looked behind me because I'm like, "Oh, somebody, a regular must have come in behind me." And no, he was there, and he was like, "Hey, welcome to the nerd store. What are you looking for? What can we help you find?" And I was like, "Oh, cool." And so I talked to him for a minute, and I was wearing Google Glass, so he asked me a couple questions about the Google Glass. But then, you know, I brought up my whole Walking Dead spiel, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we got these. We don't have the compendium, but we've got this, this, and this." And you know, he showed me a bunch of different options, and I walked out of the, or I picked up a couple of them, and he's like, "Oh, and if you like Walking Dead, you're gonna like this one too." And I can't remember which one it was, but I know I left there with like four more comic books than I had planned on. And first off, I mean, Edgar deserves a raise for his sales on that. I mean,
yeah. So good job, Edgar.
There have been so many times where he's like, "Hey, here's an extra book in your hold because I know you'll like it." And then also, I mean, he was just super friendly. And a lot of comic book stores don't have that reputation of being super friendly. Yours does. And I think also the fact that I show up there and about once a month, once every other month, there's some extra books in my hold because Edgar or whoever's pulling the holds is like, "Oh, Brandon's going to like this one. Brandon's going to want this one." And he'll drop it in there and I'll be like, you know what? It's easier to say yes than it is to figure out where to go put it on the shelf. So,
oh jeez, so, you're the sucker.
Yeah, I am. And now that I've said that to the store owner, he's gonna be like, "Hey, that to me too." Just keep putting books in Brandon's hold.
every week, just a new one in there every week.
But
all of a sudden, it's like, "You $574. Wait, what is in there? Oh, we just dropped.
We gave you one of everything. X-Men
number one. That's a 2.0.
We put in a statue or two.
We just dropped this comic in there that we have been holding for like 7 months.
Yeah,
we want to get it off the shelf, so we're just gonna put it in your hold because you're the sucker that will buy it.
But no, I mean, that's the value of comic shops right there, though. Is we joke about this, but he's not going to do that, right?
I'm not going to do that. Okay. I would never do that.
All right. So, we joke about it, but the fact that I have been introduced to a lot of stories. I read the first probably 8 issues of Outcast, and aside from The Walking Dead, I'm not really a horror guy. I don't even know why and how I got into The Walking Dead, because blood and guts and scary stuff scares me. And so, you know, but Edgar was like, hey, you like The Walking Dead? Here's Outcast. You know, and I've got Outcast. I've got the first bunch of Outcast. I had Elizabeth Breitweiser, who did the coloring on it, sign them at Comic-Con because I thought, hey, this is just cool. And that's the value of the local comic book store. And I see you expanding that to more, not just the local comic book store, but the local comic con. You're bringing in people. You're not just saying you'll like this book. You're bringing in people who are genuinely cool people who are like, you'll like these creators.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the goal.
Congratulations, you figured out the point.
But ultimately, the goal is to make people more interested in comics in general and get them to hopefully come down because they like Kevin Eastman, because they like Ninja Turtles, and hopefully leave me having met a couple new creators and maybe liking a few new stories. And whether or not they buy those stories from me isn't the point. The point is simply to create more interest in comics.
Rising tide lifts all ships.
That's right.
So
that too.
Shifts and ships, both of them.
Let's get to the most important thing. When is our podcast going to be performing at WasatchCon?
So you guys will be recording on Saturday the 28th at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Cool.
All right.
To specify.
I guess we got to prepare something.
Now, for Brandon and Nick, what are we talking about?
Well, we'll get that. We'll get to that when we get to that, okay?
Yeah, I have a feeling the 27th we're going to get a text saying, crap!
Okay, so we are recording Saturday at the 28th at 11 a.m. So if you want to come to the Valley Fair Mall and hear the sweet tones of Nick and Jeff and then whatever I'm doing.
Live and in person at Wasatch Comic Convention.
At Wasatch Comic. No, Con. At wasatchcon.com.
Oh, well, so we're not going to post it there, are we? Are we going to post it like on?
Well, no, but okay. I don't know how does this work anyway. It's after midnight. That's okay. So we'll be there. I've got some panels. Jeff's got some panels because Nick made fun of me. I'm going to point out that Nick has no panels.
Thanks,
Burn!
Roger. I'm blaming it on him because Charles is here.
Oh, okay. All right.
I was going to say thanks, newborn child, restricting my time.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks, Infinity War screening, which affects my schedule on Friday.
Yeah, and work that I probably can't get there on time, so I didn't sign up for early panels for that reason. Just making sure that I still have a job.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Life.
Stupid life.
Jeez.
Always
getting.
All right. So we'll be there. We're gonna post our panels up on social media.
Moving on.
To the thing. Yep. All right, so you can come find us there. And we're also, remember, we've got a secret code word. If you come up and for Jeff, it's whispering in his ear, Hail Hydra. For me, I want you to make a scene somehow saying Hail Hydra. And Nick, he said something, but just tell him Hail Hydra. I don't even remember what he said. We have some Infinity War tickets, and so we want to go see Infinity War with you on Saturday, April 28th. So come find us. We will hang out with you. We'll talk to you. The 11 a.m. is a great time. You'll know exactly where we're at. So, and then I'm in panels at 4, 5, and 6. Okay.
Man, you're busy.
Yeah. 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 Well, no, panel at 4, workshop at 5 and 6.
Oh. So,
or something like that. So go to wasatchcon.com, register, $15 VIP package. You cannot beat a $15 VIP package. Cool prints. You've got the ability to help help them bring in some extra comic creators. $15 VIP package. You can't beat that. Early access to the convention. I feel like I should just start making stuff up. You will be able to go and get a piggyback ride from Charles. You know, you see him, you just jump on his back.
I am not committing to this. If you see me jump on my back, just chase me down.
Oh, challenge accepted.
Oh, no.
Who is like the one person that will actually yell in the middle of your store, open the Bifrost?
That I believe is
yes.
You.
And who was the one person that did every other ridiculous thing that you said to do?
That's also Therefore, I'm a little scared about you jumping on my back.
We're going to Yoda this up, my friend. And then I'll start singing seagulls.
No.
Walking.
Take away
and
your tickets.
Rolling. Down to the beach, I'm strolling.
We don't own the rights to that. We don't own the rights.
All right.
See, Jeff, that's the way we can get him to stop. Okay, so...
Oh, I just yell shut up until he stops. Doesn't always work.
If you have ever thought about hosting a podcast, if you listen to podcasts, which if you don't, I don't know how you're doing this. Listen to podcasts, thought about hosting one, host one. I'm going to be doing a workshop there at Wasatch Con on starting a podcast. And then if you've started it, now what? And that is in conjunction with the podcast summit, which is on June 2nd. So kill two birds with one stone, go register for a free ticket to watch at Comic-Con. No, go buy a $15 VIP pass. Let's quit talking about the free stuff. Go buy a $15 pass. You get the prints. You can barely go to a Comic-Con and buy a print for $15. So to get all the extra perks, like jumping on Charles's back, I mean...
You have to use our affiliate link.
I did notice that they stopped telling people to do stuff on the Nerd Dome recently.
Huh. We did. I've gotten busy with life, and I just haven't thought of things.
Oh,
Nick, I don't know if you're aware, but Charles is putting...
No, but
I think telling people to do stuff is go register and get your tickets there.
Well, I was just thinking that maybe because I was actually doing them, they were like, yeah, maybe we should stop doing it.
Yeah, we don't put that much thought process into pretty much anything over there.
Good to know.
That's another thing we can plug. So not only are you a comic book store owner, not only are you a Comic Con running person, because there's a title that
aficionado.
I just can't think of right
founder.
Now.
Founder.
You are also the co-host on the Nerd Dome podcast. We plug your stuff a lot on this, Charles. We must like you or something.
Aww.
But
it's like
we have a
friendship or something.
I know, right? So, friendship where I have to give you money every month because that's how true friendships work, right?
That's the best kind of friendship.
Wait, hold on. You only give him money once a month?
Well, you know.
I think I'm getting the raw end of this deal.
It's funny.
Where my books come in.
It's funny how often I show up to the nerd store randomly and Jeff is just there.
I go every Friday after work.
Okay. It's okay. Because I thought that you were. Well, and then you started saying I'm there every other Saturday.
Well, now there's HeroClix every other Saturday.
Because that's the time that
Saturday,
I go to. Is I go after work on Friday. And he usually tends to get off work earlier than I do. So he just happens to be there when I show up. Okay. That makes much more sense. I was getting a little concerned. I was like, Jeff, do you just spend all your time at the nurse store? It's a great place, but.
So. About that, there is a friend of Charles's who is there a lot, who the other day I found out for the first time doesn't actually work there.
Nope.
I just thought
he does not.
He was there when he said the other day, yeah, I lost my job. I'm like, oh, wait, you don't work here? No. Like, oh, huh. Like, I just legitimately thought he worked there.
He's there a lot. And especially now that he's lost his job, he's there a lot more.
Well, you know what?
It's
a good place to go. I used to spend a bunch of lunch breaks there, especially when Batman Eternal was coming out, and I would go there every week to pick up my books. And it's like, okay, Wednesday means I'm going to go hang out at lunch at the nerd store, pick up my Batman, and then spend my lunch break there. So, okay,
I remember that.
That was shortly after that free comic book day when I was like, all right, now I'm collecting and it's the nerd store and hey, here's a weekly comic, let's do that. So
because that was smart.
Yeah Speaking of not collecting for money, all right, okay, so our random fandom this week, we got a very comic book centered episode here because random fandom for April 22nd is going to be We Stand on Guard, which is the little story about clean water rights and
you know what, sure, that's what it's about. It's about clean
it's
water.
All about Aquafina moves their location to Canada and it makes America mad. And they want
Jeff. I don't think you appreciate how hard it is to come up with a ridiculous premise for this book.
I don't think you know how annoying it is that you haven't started reading the book yet.
Oh, I'll finish the book, and I don't worry, I'll finish the book and still come up with premises. So it's America attacks Canada because they need their water. Because water is important.
Why don't we have the comic book store owner actually pitch the book like he would in the store?
Yeah.
So that's funny you bring that up, because I owned this before it was becoming a random fandom, and it's because Charles convinced me.
So convince us, Charles.
All right. So yeah, I'll give the same pitch that I've heard Jeff give on here. It's America invades Canada over their water rights, and it's told from the point of the view of the Canadian resistance.
Oh, Canada.
Yeah. And there's a character in it that speaks nothing but French, and you can still somehow understand what he's saying. Because
that's part of the reason it's a quick read. Because it's like, well, I don't need to even pay attention to that bubble.
Because the writer is good enough that he's able to convey. The writer and artist team were good enough on this one that they were able to convey what the character was saying without you being able to understand the language.
That's one of the cool things about what you can do with comic books. I love that. I love when you can, it's like, it doesn't even matter the word you're saying. Like, there was an issue of Rocket Raccoon told entirely by Groot, and just every panel was, "I am Groot." And it told a really cool story, but the only dialogue in it was, "I am Groot." So
there's the famous pizza dog issue from Hawkeye.
That won awards.
Yeah. A dog. That
was
awesome.
A great issue.
So yeah, that's the, I love comic books. Okay. Now that you told me that, I'm even more excited to read this water fight book. Did they do it at a water park?
It's the French and Canadian water fight.
Yes. The French Canadian water fight of 2018. So, all right.
It actually takes place in 2112, I believe, is the earliest date.
Future
it's a futuristic
water fight.
Water fight.
Oh, that explains
isn't
the giant
water
robots.
All dried up by then?
Well, in America.
In America.
Wow, this is getting heavy.
All right, guys. Send your feedback about We Stand on Guard to feedback@fandompodcast.com. Don't worry about spoilers. I'm of the no spoiler, or I'm of the spoilers don't matter club anymore. That said, don't spoil anything else for me, because some things I don't want spoilers. But this one, go ahead and spoil. You can also send us your thoughts and comments on Twitter @FandomCast, or we've got a Facebook group called The Fandom Maniacs that has just lots of fun stuff in there. We've got a fun little discussion going on in there right now as we speak, I'm sure, whether it's the continuation of the lunch one or the other one, because we're recording this episode earlier. So, okay. I guess with that, I'm going to say until next time.
Wasatch Comic Con, go.
Said it once, I'll say it again. It's free. You have no excuse.
Yeah, go to Wasatch Comic Con. Listen to them.
May the fandom be with you.
Roger had a similar response to my "it's free, you should go."
Guys, at this point, I've got enough audio footage of each of you. I can pretty much make you guys say anything I want you to.
Then why are we still doing this?
It's called Sex Panther.
Yeah, you're right. I probably couldn't have made you say that, but now I can.
No, I'm pretty sure that I've said Sex Panther before.
I'm sure that's somewhere.
Yeah, that's a classic.